Happy Valentine's Day. Today is February 14th, a day that we memorialize with gifts of cards and flowers and candy and dining out and maybe even jewelry. According to a survey taken by the National Retail Federation, Americans are expected this year to spend $21.8 billion on Valentine's gifts. Now, approximately just 52% of American males will celebrate Valentine's Day in one way or another. But among those, they will spend an average of $164.76. Because so many people will be staying home this year and not going out, average spending is expected to be $32 less than it was last year. But if this year is like last year, at least 6% of that spending will go for Valentine's gifts for our pets. Why do we do this? Why do we celebrate a day of Valentine's? Well, it is a holiday that romanticizes romantic love. And what is better than that? But where did this day come from? How did it start? Why February the 14th? I mean, couldn't they have picked a warmer month? I wish I had a concise answer for you to these questions, but the origins of Valentine's Day are a bit murky, to say the least. And historians have developed competing theories explaining how we arrived at this celebration that we enjoy today, you know, with the cards and the poetry and the flowers. Now, each of these different theories take into account history, religion, culture, and lore. I don't believe that there really is any single origin or explanation for Valentine's Day, but in fact, Valentine's Day is simply the end product of an assortment of influences that have, through the centuries, all woven together to produce our modern celebration. Now, the earliest place to start when you're looking at the history of Valentine's Day is with the Roman festival called Lupercalia. This was a pagan fertility festival whose origins are likely older than Rome itself. If you're not familiar with Lupercalia, and I don't know why you should be, it's going to sound a bit odd. Now, Lupercalia was observed on the 13th, 14th, and 15th of February. And during the celebration, the men would strip down and make sacrifices of goats and dogs. And then the young men would take strips of hide from these sacrificed animals and would use these strips to softly whip young women. Now, there was the belief that this whipping would promote fertility, or that if a woman was already pregnant, then it was thought that this would ensure a healthy birth. And historians assure us that these women willingly lined up for these whippings. I said it was odd. And also during Lupercalia, there was the practice of single women putting their names into a jar, and then men would come out and pull a name at random, and the two would be a couple for the celebration. And if it led to marriage, even better. But it really just sounds like a really bad TV reality show. Not surprisingly, Lupercalia was a popular holiday, kind of like Mardi Gras. And it was one of the few pagan observances still celebrated after Christianity became legalized within the Roman Empire. However, in 492 AD, Pope Gelasius came to power, and he put an end to Lupercalia. He's known as Pope Killjoy, apparently. Sometime later, the church declared that February 14th, the old date for Lupercalia, would now be a feast day celebrating the martyred saint named Valentine. Now, the easy way to interpret this is that the church attempted to replace a pagan festival with a Christian feast. But that in itself does not explain the love connection associated with Valentine's Day. The saint, known as Valentine, had been a Christian priest who had been beheaded by the Roman authorities, and the date of his execution was indeed February 14th. But despite its name, this Feast of Valentine was, well, it's really nothing out of the ordinary. It was like any other feast day, and it certainly had nothing to do with love. Now, there are a handful of stories that associate this Saint Valentine with acts of romantic love, but these are folklore from the medieval period. And that was people trying to rewrite the history. Historians argue that the roots of our modern Valentine's Day lie in the 1300s with the English poet Geoffrey Chaucer. Chaucer was the first to link the idea of romantic love with this particular calendar day. Mid-February, which is the time of the Feast of Valentine, just happens to be the time of year when the birds in Europe start mating. And in his poem called The Parliament of Fowls, which was written about 1380, Chaucer links romance and the birds and Valentine's Day and mixes it all together. Now, other poets picked up on this idea, including Shakespeare. And in the play Hamlet, Ophelia sings of her love for Prince Hamlet, saying, "Tomorrow is Saint Valentine's Day. All in the morning be time. And I, a maid at your window, to be your Valentine." It should be noted, for you English majors out there, you already know that at this point in the play, Ophelia is quite mad. The first known Valentine's Day card dates to the year 1415. It was sent by the Duke of Orleans to his wife. The Duke at the time, however, was a prisoner in the Tower of London. And in this famous letter, he wrote of how lovesick he was for his wife, whom he called his very gentle Valentine. Here in the U.S., Valentine's Day gained popularity during the Revolutionary War as people took up the habit of composing handwritten notes to their loved ones. But Valentine's Day soared in popularity in the 1840s as pre-printed cards became widely available. And then in 1907, the fate of Valentine's Day in the U.S. was sealed with the founding of a store called the Norfolk Postcard Company in Norfolk, Nebraska. It was owned by the Hall family and eventually renamed Hallmark. So, it would appear that Valentine's Day is a confluence of pagan fertility, Christian martyrdom, romantic poetry, and unbridled commercialism. So, happy Valentine's Day. But today, this day, is another day as well. It is also the day on the church calendar known as Transfiguration Sunday. And this is always the last Sunday before the beginning of Lent. Lent will start on Wednesday. And the last time that Valentine's Day and Transfiguration Sunday overlapped was 2010. But the next time that it happens won't be until 2083, 62 years from now. Transfiguration Sunday is the day that we have ordained to commemorate the event that we find in our scripture known as Jesus' transfiguration. This event, as we read a moment ago, tells of how Jesus led three of his disciples, Peter, James, and John, up a high mountain. And while they are up on that mountain, something happens. Jesus is transfigured. His clothes become bright white, whiter than any clothes on earth. And then, appearing there next to Jesus are two heroes of the faith, Moses and Elijah. And they are speaking with Jesus. And Peter takes all of this in, and he has an idea. And he says to Jesus, "Rabbi, it's good for us," Peter, James, and John, "to be here. Let us make three dwellings for you. One for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." Now, the gospel, in its note, makes it clear that this idea of Peter's was not one that had been thought through very thoroughly. And Mark tells us Peter did not know what to say. Who would? For they were terrified. Of course, they were terrified. Jesus is glowing, and these two old-timey prophet-looking guys have just appeared out of nowhere. And it's possible that they could be Moses and Elijah. Peter's idea, then, at the time, to construct these three booths, three structures. Well, it seems that Peter's intent would be to create a shrine or shrines for these men. And then this site would become a one-stop shop for prophets. People could come here and worship these greats of the faith. But God's got something to say about this. God immediately intervenes and in a voice from the cloud declares, "No," as Mark describes it. Then a cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud there came a voice, "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." And then after these words are spoken, everything goes back to how it had been. And the disciples are there alone with Jesus. He's not glowing. The others are gone. And they head back down the mountain. What does it mean when we read that Jesus was transfigured? We really can't say for certain. Some would say that Jesus was changed, that God filled him with the Spirit. Now, I would argue with that line of thought, because even from the time of creation, Jesus has been filled with the Spirit. Up on that mountain, he wasn't changed. He was only transfigured. His humanness was for a moment removed, and his divine nature shone through. The disciples were privileged to witness his full being. But more importantly, on that mountain, once again, God claims Jesus. "This is my son, the beloved." And then to this, God delivers a command. "Listen to him." Remember, Peter suggested building those three booths, one for each figure. But that's not what God has in mind. Moses and Elijah, they're exemplary heroes, and they're worthy of a booth or a shrine. But no, now we are to listen to Jesus, God's beloved son. When God calls Jesus his beloved son, God is labeling Jesus as being special. This word for beloved that we find in the gospel is agapetos, which is based on the word agape, a word we're familiar with, a word that describes a type of love, a love that is unconcerned with oneself and wholly concerned with the goodness of others. It is a sacrificial love. In agape, we give of ourselves for others. Now, agape is different than other types of love, love such as eros, which is the romantic love, or philos, the love that you would have for a friend. Agape is God's love. And when God loves something, we should pay attention. Our modern Valentine's Day is a day to celebrate the romantic love which we might share with one another. And romantic love can be an abiding love. It is a mark of the commitment two people make to another. It's a reflection also of God's love for us. I say that when people stand up here and get married, that the love that they bring is a reflection of God's love for us all. Romantic love is a good love. Our Valentine festival came about because we wanted it, we desired it, we needed this festival. It is an outward expression of our inward emotions. But on this Transfiguration Sunday, we are also called to experience a different love, the love that God has for his Son, for our Christ. The love that is formed at creation. The love which binds God to us and us to God. The Transfiguration is not something that we're supposed to understand or explain like Valentine's Day. It's a bit murky. The Transfiguration is wonderful and frightening. It's unexpected. It's not something we normally find in our world because it is holy. And Jesus Christ himself is holy because he is the one that we follow. He is the one to whom we give our very lives. He is the ultimate Valentine's Day gift from our God. He is the perfect and complete embodiment of God's great love for us. Happy Valentine's Day.